On January 22nd in Washington, D.C., every year, we have the March for Life. But every 4 years, this march is moved ahead about a week to accommodate the logistical difficulties of dealing with the many people present at the presidential inauguration. The March for Life is the biggest protest march in Washington. It's held every year, no matter what the weather is. One year I was there, and it was in 2013, they estimated the crowd to be about 500,000 people. And it is a protest march against the horrible decision of the Supreme Court in 1973 called Roe versus Wade. But it's not only a protest march. It's not only an action against something, but it is above all a pro-life march. It's a march for life. It's interesting that it's not called a march against abortion, but it's called the March for Life. And that's what we witness when we go to this march. Every time I go to the March for Life, I always feel really impressed by the happiness of the people who are there. So many people, so many young people who are speaking their minds, and they're standing up against injustice, but above all, they're standing for life. And everybody who goes there leaves there with a sense of commitment, renewed commitment to the cause of life. When there's a presidential inauguration, the March for Life is moved ahead about a week to deal with all the crowds of the people. There'd just be logistically too many people in Washington, D.C. during that time. So this year, it's moved ahead several days. My Archbishop, Cardinal O'Malley, has been to every March for Life for like 40 years. And it's a real witness to the dignity of life. At the March for Life, there are all different groups. One group that I found very inspiring was a group called Silent No More, which was a group of women who had had abortions and who were there to testify to others about the pain that came into their life because of those decisions. And they were also testifying to mercy, to the mercy of God, that forgiveness is possible, and the ability also to forgive oneself. And we have so many different groups of people there manifesting their love for life. Some of you may know of Abby Johnson, who once worked for Planned Parenthood as a director of one of their clinics and had a major conversion experience, which led her to abandon that movement and move to the cause of life. And she has become one of the most courageous witnesses in our country to the cause for life. And her group is present there in Washington at the March for Life. And I just heard, you may have heard this, that she attended the Women's March in Washington, D.C., which happened yesterday, relative to the time of this recording. And her group had registered formally with the organization that was running the Women's March, and they wanted to have some kind of official representation at the march. And when the organizers discovered that they were pro-life, they declined their sort of membership as an official organization attached to the Women's March. And when I heard that, I said, that's really classless. It means that the organizers of the Women's March were intolerant of diversity. If someone was there thinking differently than they weren't allowed. And they wanted to go there, not only as witnesses to life, but to support the cause of the march, which was to uphold the dignity of women, that women should be treated with equality and with respect. And they were denied any official sort of recognition at this march because they were pro-life. That was totally classless. But she was able to go there and march with the rest of the people, and it was a good witness that to be pro-woman means to be pro-life. I was at the March for Life in 2013, and that was an amazing experience. There were so many people there. I think it was one of the largest crowds they've had there. I was also at the March for Life last year, 2016, but I never actually made it to the march itself. I flew into Washington, and when I was on the airplane, someone next to me said, "Why are you going to Washington?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to the March for Life," and they started laughing. And I'm like, "Okay, why are they laughing at me?" And I said, "Why?" And they said, "Do you know what else is going there at the same time?" And I said, "I don't know what." And the man said, "A blizzard." And I hadn't been watching the news at the time. And so I get there, and I'm in Washington, and I called up the leader of the group that I was going to be with from my archdiocese. And I said, "Father, Are we still on for the March for Life? I just arrived in Washington. I'm going to make my way to our hotel. I'll be there shortly. And he said to me, you didn't get the email? And I said, what email? He said, we canceled it like 5 days ago because of the snow. So I got to our hotel and it was empty. Usually there's like 500 people there or more. It was like a ghost town. And I thought maybe the Lord wanted me there for some reason. But I was able to spend some time there to pray and I came back, but I never made it to the march. But I had an experience at the March for Life in 2015 that has stayed with me ever since. And it was a profound experience of someone witnessing to the cause of life in their everyday circumstances. You see, sometimes when we think of pro-life, that means we just have to go to the March for Life or, you know, tell someone that we're pro-life or, you know, support pro-life politicians. But the person I saw there kind of really emphasized by her life the witness to the pro-life cause every single day of our lives. And I was with my group. Now, I'm actually kind of short relative to other people, and whenever I'm in this huge crowd of people at the March for Life, I always get separated from my group and I can never find them again because everybody else is tall and I'm looking for them and I can't find them, and they've all gone this way and I'm actually wandering over this way looking for them. So I went through the whole march and I made it to Union Station. If you've been to Washington, D.C., you know that Union Station is where all the trains and the buses and the taxis arrive and depart from. You know, it's a real busy place. And I said, well, I'm bound to find my group here because our bus is waiting to take us to the next, you know, step on our pilgrimage of life. So I was waiting outside of Union Station. I'm just standing there and looking at all the people. Now, you have to imagine there was something like 300 or 400,000 people around, and all these people just, and mostly young people, all running around, you know, going here, going there, and I can't find my group. And this woman comes out of Union Station. She looked like she was probably in her mid-60s, and she had a suitcase with her, and she stands right next to me. And I greet her. I said, hello, ma'am, and she said hi, and she's looking around at all the people. And she says to me, what are all these people doing here? I've been to this place many times, and I've never seen all of these people. It's amazing. And I said, ma'am, you don't know about the March for Life? And she said, no, I've never heard of it. And I was just traveling through Washington waiting for a taxi, and I see all these people. What is it? And so I explained to her that we were protesting abortion. We were also standing up for the cause of life. And she started to cry. And I thought to myself, oh no, maybe I, you know, touched a sensitive thing for her, and, you know, this is really troubling her or something. And she started crying. And she said to me, I want to tell you this. I want to tell you that I was going to retire from work several years ago, but I can't, because I'm actually raising my grandchildren, and their parents won't raise their children, so I have to do it. And I feel that in my situation in life, I am living what all of you people here are doing in your March for Life. And I was so struck by that, and I said, yes, ma'am, you're living the cause of life right in your own situation by caring for these children, and it's hard. There's a great sacrifice in it, but you're living it every single day. And she said, I want to thank you for what you are doing here. And to see so many young people here really gives me hope. And eventually we parted ways, and that has stayed with me ever since. The reality of living the pro-life cause every situation in your life, every single day. Because we're not just against abortion. We are, because it's a taking of a human life. But we're more than that, we're for life. And that woman was a living sign to me of this cause for life. And that's what we need to do, to be a people of life. You know, in the Bible, there are some references to people living in a land under the shadow of death, and that a light comes to them, and that light is Jesus Christ. Well, it's kind of like in America, actually in the world, we're living in a land overshadowed by death. Pope John Paul the Great, one of the greatest popes and a saint of our time, had this wonderful, actually it wasn't wonderful, it was stark, this stark distinction between the culture of life and the culture of death. He wrote this wonderful encyclical letter about life called Evangelium Vitae, the Gospel of Life. You should read it. It's a very good letter, and it has so many wonderful teachings in it. And he made this distinction between a culture of life and a culture of death. Well, what do we do in the face of the shadow of death, which seems to have been overrunning our culture in America for many decades? Well, is our response anger? Is our response condemning others? Is our response despair, and we just go along with the flow of this sort of culture of death? No. Our response is to be a people for life, to love life in our present circumstances, and to teach people about this sort of newness of embracing life, how that's most important. You know, life is the first gift that we receive. It's the first gift that God gives to us, and every other gift we have in life rests on the foundation of this gift of life. What happens is we often look at the problems we have to face, the sacrifices, the sufferings, the constant demands upon us when we have to care for someone, and we don't focus on the life that we're serving in raising children or caring for the sick and the elderly, or, you know, just helping people on their way. Well, the cause for life, the march for life, calls us to love life, to really serve the cause of life. It's not just a one-time thing, you know, every January 22nd we become very pro-life. No, it's a lifestyle of loving life and serving life. One of the things that I find very important from the witness of Abby Johnson is she often talks about that sometimes in the pro-life movement there is almost a sense of condemning others who have had anything to do with abortion. And she urges us to forgive others and to teach them that forgiveness for themselves is possible. Because, you know, if all we do is condemn others, then we're not going to inspire them to change their hearts. I remember in one of his homilies at the March for Life, Cardinal Sean O'Malley talked about our need to change people's hearts. You know, we want to change the law of the land and overturn Roe v. Wade, but more importantly, we got to change people's hearts. Because even if Roe v. Wade is overturned, and it should be, if people's hearts are still moving under the shadow of death, then they're not going to be living that pro-life, that cause for life in the culture of life. So we have to change people's hearts and teach them, I would say, about these two important things. Number one, the immense gift that life is. No matter what situation it is, whether someone is sick or handicapped or poor or unborn or sick or dying, that life itself is a gift, always a gift, and that to serve this gift is to be on the path of greatness. And the other thing is the reality of God's mercy and the possibility that if you've been involved on the other side of the issue, forgiveness is possible. Not only from God, obviously, but also you can forgive yourself. It's important for us to work on the cause of life every single day. We have some good organizations around the country and the world that, you know, that help pregnant mothers who are in poverty and things like that. And I think of like Good Counsel Homes in New Jersey and other places, Friends of the Unborn that we have in Massachusetts, which are organizations that, you know, help poor pregnant mothers to have their children, especially when they're in situations where they've been abandoned or, you know, rejected by others. You got to be pro-life. You can't just be against abortion. You have to help life. And these kinds of organizations deserve our support and deserve our imitation to really help people to love life. And so, brothers and sisters, as the country at this time gets ready for the biggest march in Washington that happens every single year. Probably, I would say, the most important march, because it's a march that defends the very fabric of society. What unites us? Human life and human dignity. And that's been trampled upon too many times in this country and in this world. And we need people to stand up for life. May we be a people for life. In your situation right now, no matter what has gone on or what is going on, be a person for life. See the gift that is right before you, that is right before your eyes. Love this gift and serve it. In this way, you will be a light for those who live in a land under the shadow of darkness, a light that gives people hope and that inspires people to love life. God bless you.